What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, he's Thomas Drance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well.
I'm Thomas Drance.
Yeah, that's right.
I cover the Canucks for The Athletic as well.
I've stopped calling you a Canucks insider.
Thank you.
But you got some inside information last week.
Well, sure.
Maybe I should bring it back on the days where you post like a what I'm hearing piece.
No, I just don't like it. It's like Canucks insider. I barely knew her.
All right. You know the team. Come on. Don't play it off like that. Anyways, we're coming to you live.
Producer Dom was so mad at that. I just don't like the moniker.
That's fair.
Geek. I like geek.
Sure.
As we've discussed.
Canucks nerd.
Yes.
Thomas Drance.
Thank you.
Who also covers the team for The Athletic. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's a Canucks game day. They're taking on the Boston Bruins. 4 o'clock Pacific start time for that one. Lots to get into on the show. Yannick Hansen is going to join us, as often happens when the Canucks are out east. The People's Show gets axed, so we benefit. We get to have Yannick Hansen on the show. That's always fun. Lots going on today in general. Lots of interesting tidbits and rumors and bits of news from Canucks land right now.
I'd say the weirdest Canucks news day in recent memory.
Well, I don't know. I would say the one where their star player and emotional leader of the team took a indefinite leave of absence for personal reasons.
Sure. But I mean, in terms of the, like, there's a more cacophonous feel today because it's coming at us from all sides. It feels like you have, you know, Boudreaux Nuggets on the Spitting Chicklets podcast.
Yes.
You have sort of resurfacing of stories about disputes between teammates. Likewise, on the Spitting Chicklets podcast, you have Patrick Alvin dropping some pretty eyebrow-raising commentary to Ian McIntyre on a variety of fronts. You have a Canucks game day. You have the return of Brock Besser and sort of what he confirmed to McIntyre, who's on the road, about his status. I mean, it just feels like a multifaceted, like a layered day of news. And now the Canucks are going to play twice in 24 hours.
Yep.
And the conversation around the team and sort of the stakes of it based on the outcomes here in Boston and Pittsburgh could go very much one way or the other.
Now, before we get into all of that and we go to the whiteboard here in just a second, I want to do a palate cleanser. And this is pure patting ourselves on the back for something that has nothing to do with our show. But I just want to get this out there, and you'll appreciate this, Drance. As we wake up today, fantasy football, Sportsnet 650 league, after 12 weeks, the standings are, I'm in first. You're in second. Best friend of the show, Dmitry Filipovich, is in third.
Yep.
Producer Lena is in fourth. Utter domination. Utter domination from Canucks Talk. We are running the Sportsnet 650 Fantasy Football League. And I just wanted to take a moment to recognize our pure dominance of this league.
Kind of no surprise, though.
No surprise, but also points for, it's us three.
Yes, points for, it's us three. Dimitri's on a bit of like a PDO heater, but he's still third.
Let's be real. Let's be real. Jamie's team is easily the one to beat.
I'm slowing down a little bit, but we'll see.
Everything I've done.
There's that moan again.
everything I've done to defeat Jamie. And that includes taking a big flyer on pneumonia Debo Samuel, which I am very much regretting at the moment, but we'll see.
Well, anyways, I just wanted to get that out there. A little palate cleanser to start the show. Some good vibes, patting ourselves on the back. We're crushing it at fantasy football, guys.
Man.
Good work, everyone.
I'll be honest with you. I had such a bad weekend.
Yeah, you don't need to get into it. I was hoping this would bring your mood up a little bit.
No.
Anyways.
I don't care about this league.
All right, enough about that. We got a lot to get into. Let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
All right, it's your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. It's November 26th today. The headline, of course, the Canucks play the Bruins tonight in Boston, and it is a multifaceted revenge game here. Multiple players on either side of things. Nikita Zadorov, of course, and Elias Lindholm, playoff stars. Zadorov was a playoff star. I guess Lindholm was as well. A featured player in the playoffs for the Canucks, of course, who went to Boston. Jake DeBrus, Danton Heinen, former Bruins.
Don't undersell it. I think the story is, though, that Lindholm came to Vancouver, had a rough first couple of weeks. The team was credibly reported to be considering flipping him within his first month on the team. He ends up being a standout performer in the playoffs, right? A huge amount of clutch plays.
Yep.
From Elias Lindholm, especially
top
6 minutes.
Yep.
Top 6 minutes, hard matchups, ingratiates himself with the veterans of the team to the point that after the season, they're involved in pitching him to remain. And yet, for all of that, he spurns them. Zadorov likewise. Zadorov was a priority for this team, right? Like they pushed hard to keep both players, and both players decided to go to Boston, where to this point it has not worked out well, although the team has won 2 in a row under new head coach Joe Sacco. To me, that's the stakes of the meet your exes of this all.
What? What are the stakes?
Oh, that like these players were offered, at least in Lindholm's case, something pretty similar and decided to leave. And in Zadorov's case, you know, not offered something that similar, I don't think, in terms of term, but certainly in terms of the ballpark, right? He, you know, and I know he felt disrespected. He said so afterwards. I mean, there's some heat, I think, to this particular matchup against two players
that
moved together.
Yeah, and
to
I don't know about
ancient rival.
I don't know about from the Lindholm side of things, but Zadorov has spoken about how he has some hard feelings. Right, didn't really think it went the way he wanted it to. Lindholm, it's interesting because there was always the reporting and the smoke out there connecting him to Boston. Right, that they viewed him as the guy they wanted at the top of their lineup, taking over from Patrice Bergeron. So I wonder if there was a role thing going into it as well. Right, the opportunity to be more of a clear-cut top six player than he would be behind Miller and Pettersson in Vancouver. I also think, and it's interesting because we get a lot of texts about, we did in the summer as well when those guys left, right? Like, how could they have let these guys leave? Now it's really shifted to just Zadorov. Sometimes somebody will throw Lindholm in there, but you know, I do think, like, man, he made himself a lot of money, I think, in the playoffs, right? Because you look at the sample size now on either side of it, 26 regular season games last year in Vancouver, 12 points. 22 regular season games so far of Boston, 10 points, right? So under a half point a game in both of those samples. Meanwhile, in the playoffs, it was 10 points, 5 goals in 13 games. So I think Boston saw just enough there that they kind of could talk themselves into, this is still that top of the lineup piece that we've been courting, that we've been wanting for a long time. And it's not working out that way for Elias Lindholm right now. Like, still a very useful player, obviously, but I think miscast in that top of the lineup, play driving, you know, offensive generator type of role that I think Boston was hoping he would fill. So that's the now Boston players, former Canucks side of things as well. I'm curious to know, like, how does Jake DeBrusque look at this one, right?
Oh,
because
yeah,
obviously the team that drafted him, and
right, DeBrusque,
some really good moments, some not so good moments as well, right? And you know, now he makes the decision to leave.
Mostly good, I think.
Yeah, the mostly end good, but it was up and down.
The end of the Bruce Cassidy era was interesting. Does that add some heat to Vegas, Vancouver?
I don't know about that. Isn't there all, I mean, they're division rivals trying to win the division. There's
some
heat there anyways.
Yeah. And there's the interesting part about, like, for me, the heat in Vancouver, Vegas is the fact that their team's built opposite. They sort of took opposite paths through this offseason. So there's like a philosophical battle, you know, building through the middle versus building with depth on the wings, right? That I think is interesting, especially given that Tockett and Cassidy are working together and have spent months talking like defensive schemes and best practices. And, you know, those teams will be well prepared for what the one another wants to do. Look, Boston, they get Besser back. There's a variety of interesting stakes with X's on both sides, multiples, multiple X's on both sides. A very awkward meeting.
It really is.
An awkward meeting between old friends.
And Derek Forward's not even involved. It could have been five.
Yeah.
It could have been a quintuple revenge game instead of a mere quadruple revenge game as it is tonight. How much are you buying new coach bump for the Bruins? I know they've won two, but it's been like 2-1 goal wins, right? What, 1-0, 2-1, I believe. So not exactly sparkling performance right out of the gate, but they've won both games. So there you go.
Well, I believe that with Boston, what's up is down and what's down is up, right? And, you know, like, I've talked so many times. There's so many times that I've been like, oh man, without Chara, this team's going to be in trouble. Without Tuukka Rask, Tuukka Rask, most underrated player of the last 10 years. How are they going to do without him? And it's like, Allmark and Swayman are the best goalie tandem ever. It's like, okay, sure. And then they lose Patrice Bergeron, and it's like, no way they can overcome the loss of player, coach, and heartbeat / metronome of the organization, Patrice Bergeron.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead it's like, Hey, Pavel Zacha, prepare to score 50 points, baby. Charlie Coyle, top line center. Let's go. Geeky. Is it Connor or Morgan?
I believe it's Connor.
Connor Geeky. Sorry, I don't know why I got my geekies.
No, it's Morgan.
Morgan.
Oh, wow.
Morgan Geeky, prepare to be a standout player at center. So I just have this. The Bruins have defied my expectations and defied what I consider to be logic and reason for 15 years now. And so, you know, they start off meekly this season, but some of their struggles are Swayman, right?
Yep.
Some of their struggles are that their best players aren't playing like their best players. You know, watching them play, there's some Pasternak stuff from a basic accountability standpoint. Slow line changes, shifts that are too long, being on the wrong side of the puck, like just some loose change that I think their best player has been leaving on the ice. It's one of the reasons why I sort of understood the Montgomery firing in a way that I think most of the industry didn't, or at least felt like a lot of the industry was outraged about it because he'd won so many games for this team that always wins a lot of games, right? That keeps firing Jack Adams winning coaches and then keeps coming and it's not a big deal. Do you know all of the head coaches that they've fired have, like the last three coaches that they fired have all been hired within a week?
Really?
Sorry. Claude Julien took a little bit more time, but within like 10 days, Claude Julien, Bruce Cassidy, and Montgomery. I mean, so I think if Sacco can help, can even just help like Pasternak clean up some of that little like Rick Tocchet 101 stuff, I think that'll make a difference. So I'm not writing off the Bruins by any means, and I would say do so at your own risk. this is exactly the team that's going to make you look silly.
And I would say like better performances from Pasternak, Marchand, McAvoy, the guys at the top of the lineup. Like that's the most obvious way that a coaching change can help them, right? Because sometimes just it doesn't even matter who you're bringing in. Getting rid of the guy your best players are tired of and don't like anymore, that can do wonders for their performance. That can do wonders for their ability and their willingness to play the game the right way and take care of all those things for their energy, their motivation, all of that, right? So that could be the situation the Bruins are going to find themselves in. By the way, did you hear, they talked about it on the morning show today, the conspiracy theory out of Boston from Boston Sports Radio that Montgomery was trying to get fired because he knew the Blues were so enamored with him because he'd worked there in the past that they would immediately offer him this 5-year deal, which was longer than he was ever going to get in Boston. So he was like purposely antagonizing Marchand and Pasternak, trying to get fired because he knew he would just land in St. Louis with a nice deal in his back pocket.
Hey, if that's how it went down, respect.
Good for him.
No, look, it's not just a full contact sport on the ice, baby. Get paid.
Sure.
I mean, if that is true, I don't even think that's worthy of criticism. How disposable are coaches in this league?
So I'm not willing to believe that.
Oh, I don't even believe it. I'm just saying, even if it were true, I don't see it as a knock against him.
What I would believe is that not that he tried to get fired, but that he didn't. He didn't like bend on his principles to try to keep his job. You know what I mean? He was like, I'm going to do what I want. I think this is right. It's not that I think it's going to tank the team. I just think it's right. I know it's going to ruffle feathers and probably reduce my job security, but whatever. I'm going to get hired right away anyways.
I have zero insight into the matter. Yeah. I've worked with Montgomery one time in my career, found him to be affable, transparent, pleasant, clever. So, but I don't know much about him. I didn't have that high an opinion of his work in Boston, to be totally honest with you. Certainly I'm out of step with the industry. I think he was a little closer to average than most would seem to suggest in our business. But even if that were true, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I'm serious.
Sometimes you got to hand it to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So moving on to the broadsheet here, and there's a lot of stuff that we can at least mention. Again, as you said off the top of the show, just a lot of different things out there about the Canucks, and a lot of it coming from the Spit and Chicklets podcast and Paul Bissonnette. And I mean, Bissonnette, very much in the center of of conversation in the hockey world right now after like getting jumped, but then beating up six random dudes
taking on all comers.
Apparently.
Unbelievable.
Which is just an incredible story. But anyways,
I love how the police report, like the police blotter local reporting, makes it so clear that he was like, hey guys, chill. Like there is no question in the police report who the police think is the good guy in this.
Yes.
And you know what? That tracks with everything I think.
Well, the other guy's got arrested with arrested, right? And charged, I think. So yeah. It's pretty
clear. They have mugshots. There's, I saw Jason Bruff's joke that they look like the cast of The Departed, and it's incredible.
So anyways, on his podcast, Paul Bisignetto on Spit and Chicklets, talking about, and I bring this up just kind of out of a sense of completeness, right? Like, it's a major podcast. Bisignetto's a major figure, major analyst for TNT in the States. So it's worth, like, you can't ignore when he's bringing something spicy up related to the Canucks. But, you know, again, kind of broaching the subject of, I think the words he used were ruffled feathers, specifically between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Now, I don't know. I haven't gone through and scrubbed and found the audio, right? I'm going off social media reports here. I don't know if he's connecting it specifically to the leave of absence that JT Miller is currently on or anything like that. But he even asked the question, you know, like, could they consider a trade? And again, I'm bringing this up here just to kind of check a box more than anything. Yeah. Like, I don't, are we really going to do Pettersson Miller discourse again? That's my first question seeing this was, is there anything new here, or is this just an echo of stuff we've been hearing for what, 3-4 years now?
So my understanding too, and I likewise haven't listened in full, but it seems to make reference to a 2021 sort of episode, sort of obliquely. So, you know, we've been through this conversation.
I think we've talked about it and kind of as much as we can, right? Yeah. Like,
I think we think it's substantive to some extent, but I don't have a sense of like how it's tracked of late.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Bisignetto plugged in, right? I don't think he's shooting off the cuff necessarily, mm-hmm. right? Like I take what he's saying on that podcast pretty seriously. You know, I think we've all learned to over the years, mm-hmm. right? And so, yeah, just an interesting note. I don't know that we can unpack it too much more than that at the moment.
It's, again, my question, and I don't know that we'll get an answer, is there new information here, or is it, again, as I said, just kind of a continuation of things we've heard, things we've had a chance to debate and kind of speculate about for a few years now, but worth putting out there at least, worth letting everyone know what's going on that front. I also want to mention here, and we'll put this in the broadsheet, Patrick Alvin speaking to our colleague Ian McIntyre on the road in Boston, give a little bit of an update on JT Miller. And I'll read the statement here from Patrick Alvin. Says, first and foremost, I'm very proud of JT seeking help. General manager Patrick Alvin said Monday, I don't know if he said it, but I believe that he's going to be a better person, better teammate, and better hockey player when he returns. And we sure miss him. He's such an impactful hockey player. I think we have, and the league has, all the right support to help him. So again, not that you should be expecting significant details from Patrick Alvin on the JT Miller leave of absence. Obviously that was not going to be the case, but that is, I believe, Alvin's first comment on it. So there it is from Alvin, proud of JT for seeking help. And they think he's going to be better person, better teammate, better hockey player when he returns.
By far the most color we've got.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, we'll learn more as it goes, but I think it's important, you know, given the sort of cone of silence that's enveloped the story, out of respect for Miller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while respecting his privacy, I think this is an important sort of signpost along the way as we wrap our head around exactly what this team has gone through, in particular their emotional leader over the course of the first few months of the season, and how that's impacted sort of what we've seen on the ice and what we'll see over the balance of the season.
Now, the other interesting quote from Patrick Alvin there was on Thatcher Demko, who I believe he said something along the lines of his recovery has gone better. I'm just looking for the quote. Yeah, here it is from Alvin. Things have actually gone better than I anticipated. He was working so hard and was so determined to get better. You guys see him out there on the ice, but the amount of time that he spent with our strength and medical staff, I'm very happy and pleased where we are that he's probably getting into game time decision status here. That's from Patrick Alvin to Ian McIntyre. And you know, you read that and the latter part of it, right, where he talks about the effort that he's put in and he's getting close to being a game time decision. That's all great. It's a little hard for me to believe that this is better than anticipated. Like, better from what point, right? If this is better than you anticipated a month ago, okay, I can buy that. If this was better than you anticipated in August, well, it's like, what were you expecting? And how serious was this, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know about that.
It's American Thanksgiving, man.
Yeah.
You know, when we were first reporting this out in August, you know, we were pretty confident that he wouldn't be ready to start training camp and wouldn't be ready to mm-hmm. play in the preseason. And the team was hopeful, based on what I was hearing at the time, that maybe opening night would be pushing it a bit, but like within the realm of what might be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And Demko himself has talked about sort of finding a different level after training camp, right? So, yeah, I mean, I'm a little surprised by that. I won't say it defies belief that this is ahead of schedule or has exceeded the club's expectations. That's not quite a match with what I'd been hearing over the course of the past few months. But anyway.
Again, I think there's enough wiggle room where... Is it better than he was like, is this specific process of him rejoining
totally,
the team?
Totally.
You know what I mean? Is that going better than expected?
And
right.
It's not like, measured in time.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can understand and I can think of very reasonable explanations for
sure. And one hopes that the most reasonable explanation is that while the timeline hasn't been as accelerated as the club's most optimistic view, the substantive healing,
mm-hmm.
the ability to get to your game has, right? That's what you hope.
The ramp up process. Like, it could be as simple as it took a lot longer than we hoped for him to start ramping up. But once
now,
he started ramping up, it's gone better than we were hoping.
So that's the optimistic read. Let's hope that's the case.
Absolutely. To the lineup notes, and there's maybe some other like Bruce Boudreau stuff.
We actually should get into the Bruce Boudreau cameo thing.
Okay. You take it.
Boudreau also joined Spitting Chicklets.
Yeah, it was a very Canucks drama heavy Spitting Chicklets.
No kidding. And discussed a story, told a story about how general manager Patrick Alvin barred him from cameo under threat of his job. And we'll all remember the heartwarming Bruce Boudreau cameos that fans were buying and sort of lapping up, right? They were posted. And you know, it was a big part of that like lovable Bruce There It Is run. Look, we know how toxic it got between the organization and Boudreau. Like, we know that, right? We had a sense of it. We could smell it over the course of that season. Honestly, I don't even know that anyone was hiding it, to be totally honest
Certainly
with you.
Not as the season went on. They weren't. They
the
sure weren't.
The season went on. I mean, Rutherford said on After Hours that he didn't know that Boudreau had a second year of his deal. That was like 2 weeks into the year. You know, and by November, you had Boudreau giving availabilities about how he'd write a book about this season. And, you know, the Rutherford interview with Riccio and Sat in November. I mean, I think it was pretty open shut. I don't think anyone was even hiding it. So, you know, just a hilarious detail about sort of how that all transpired. And I guess the one takeaway that I'd have is, you know the movie Gone Girl?
Yeah, I do, yes.
You know how both sides are like very wily about utilizing the media and about acting the parts?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of feels like that, right? Like,
well, it is. I have
cameo,
to say.
Like removing a way for Boudreau to, you know what I mean? Like,
and then
of course the Boudreau sort of reaction in that final week and the emotional furor that built up and honestly the organization's feeling on it. Right. That Boudreau had sort of played them and, you know, how that sort of changed some of the way that this team interacts with the public. Like, that's sort of what it reminds me of. It's honestly Gone Girl, but with Boudreau and Alvin / Rutherford instead of Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. What do you think?
My other thought was, it's like, well, we're going to fire you if you don't start using cameo. It's like, yeah, you're going to fire me anyways. That's not it. That's not up for discussion. I know that.
I wonder who's poor old Doogie Howser in this story. Anyway.
Okay. Anyways, that's the Bruce Boudreau update. We'll quickly run through the rest of the whiteboard here. Lineup notes. As we mentioned, Brock Besser is going to make his return to the lineup. Max Sasson comes out after making his NHL debut in Ottawa, picking up a point. Rick Tocchet saying, yeah, hard decision. It's not as if he deserves to come out, but, you know, 13 healthy forwards now, so somebody's got to be a scratch. And tonight, it'll be Max Sasson. Playoff standings update from Dom's model. Bunch of Western Conference teams lose last night. LA, Calgary lost. Nashville loses again. So the Canucks playoff odds tick back up to a robust 93% and still tracking a few points behind the Edmonton Oilers for first place in the Pacific Division per Dom's model and just neck and neck with the Vegas Golden Knights for second as well.
We doing gambling odds?
Yes.
All right. Gambling odds. The Canucks are playing in Boston where they are underdogs. Plus 100. So, you know, not significant underdogs, but you can get an even money bet on the money line if you favor Vancouver to beat the Boston Bruins and new head coach Joe Sacco for the first time in his Bruins tenure. Bruins minus 120. The over-under is set at 5.5. A lot of respect for Bruins goaltending. Mm-hmm. And
it's going to be Lankanen, I believe, right?
Lankanen, yeah. Versus Swayman. So 5.5 in there is, as you might expect, steam on the under. You can get plus 105 for over 5.5 goals. Ooh, we have a steam drop now from our esteemed producer.
Oh, wow.
Dom's so mad. I love it. All right, anyway, that's the gambling odds.
There you go.
And that closes what's got to be the most bizarre.
We touched on a lot of different things.
That is the most bizarre whiteboard we have ever done.
We got a Departed and a Gone Girl reference in, at least. Maybe some other movies. I don't know. Could go back and listen. But yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on with the Canucks. Oh, should we mention, by the way, Frank Saravelli on Central last night quashing the David Jurecek to the Canucks Reddit rumors?
That was fantastic. And then
shout out to Frank.
By the way, all day in my mentions on both Blue Sky and Twitter, people were saying free Gucci in reference to the original R Canucks poster. So free Gucci.
All right. On that note, we'll take a break. We got an open segment on the other side. Hit us up with your Canucks questions. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk here coming up on Sportsnet 650.